Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. The scheduled guest for this evening was Brooks Agnew, and I did get an email from Brooks this afternoon, and he said he wanted to switch the show to 9 p.m. if that was possible. I emailed him back and haven't heard back from him. So hopefully, maybe he'll call in, maybe he won't. It's hard to tell. We've had some strange luck with guests this past week. However, I do have some interesting information that I want to pass on. I've been looking at the situation in the Middle East right now. And in Syria, it looks like we have two different sects of Islam that are fighting each other. The president of Syria, his name is Bashar al-Assad, and he's been demonized very much by the Western media. And he isn't the villain he's been made out to be. He is financing Hezbollah. He's backed up by the Russians. And it's really Russia and Iran that have kept Bashar al-Assad alive, so to speak. Our government is now opposing Syria and Russia. However, my instincts are telling me that our government is clearly in the wrong in this situation. Going against the Russians and Assad seems like insanity. You know, we only have a few weeks left in the Obama administration. Let's hope he doesn't get us into a world war. Now, on a bit of a side note, I've done some more research about Islam. And according to some, the meaning of the word Islam is submission. And there is at least one picture of Obama where he's seen bowing to the Muslim king of Saudi Arabia. Now, what's going on in the Middle East right now, according to my guest, Stephen Pidgeon, who I find to be very, very well informed, he is saying that the Saudis want to put a natural gas pipeline into Europe, and they want to go from the Middle East to Europe. And unfortunately, they're cut off by the country Syria. Now, Iraq and Iran are Shiites. However, Syria has a majority Sunni population. And the one unusual thing about Syria is that it's governed by a Shiite minority. Now, I don't know that much about the difference between the Sunnis and the Shiites. I know that the Shiites, are one branch of Islam that holds that the Islamic prophet Muhammad designated a successor, a caliph. Now, I guess the Sunnis do not believe that to be the case. So there was a great debate about who had the authority after the death of Muhammad. And this debate caused a great separation in the Muslim community. And that's why one of the reasons why we have so much conflict. We exacerbated that after World War I, where England, France, and Russia divided up the Ottoman Empire. And that created a whole new era of sectarianism. After the passing of more years, the participation of the U.S. in the war in Iraq caused even more religious separation. Now, the country of Syria is blocking the Saudis from running their natural gas pipeline into Turkey and then into Europe. So the Saudis would have to ship their gas another way, which would make it much more expensive to them. This natural gas pipeline that I'm talking about is ironically called the Friendship Pipeline, and it will run from somewhere in the Middle East, possibly Iran or Saudi Arabia, into Europe. The pipeline was planned to be about 3,500 miles long with a diameter of about 56 inches. Now, according to some of the research that I've done, our president, Obama, began manipulating this civil war in Syria. under the guidance of the Saudis. And it appears that Barack Obama and much of our U.S. government may be under the control of Saudi Arabia. And you notice how Russia has been demonized lately. Oh, they've been hacking our voting or whatever. Well, most of the voting machines are not on the internet, so there's really no way they can be hacked in that sense. So, and the statements that the Russians are hacking the election is vague. I mean, what do they mean by that? Do they mean somehow that they've broken into the voting machines and changed the votes? It doesn't make sense. It's kind of an absurd thing. But if you look at the civil war in Syria, you can see that why they may want to oppose Russia, why they want to stir up dissent against Russia. Because if our government is being heavily influenced by Saudi Arabia, to say the least, then our media might reflect that. In fact, there's a Saudi prince that at one point had invested about $6 billion in our media. So we're in this very strange and scary situation in the U.S. But let's get back to the civil war in Syria. This civil war in Syria, it has lasted for about a decade and has resulted in about 370,000 deaths. And there has been more than 11 million people displaced from their homes. That would be like the entire state of Ohio being evacuated. Currently, the leader of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, has the biggest humanitarian crisis in the world. So let's delve into this whole Shiite-Sunni thing a little bit more. Bashar al-Assad, he's what's called an Alawite, which I guess is a branch of the Shiites. And he took over in the year 2000 after the death of his father. Again, these Alawites are similar to the Shias or the Shiites. The Syrians, many other of the Syrians are Sunnis, and they protested the rule of Bashar al-Assad in 2011. Well, I guess Bashar al-Assad used some of his military to break up these protesters. Well, that was opportunity for ISIS to attack both sides. So what's going on, or what has gone on, is that the Syrians are now leaving Syria in the millions. And it appears that the final fall of Aleppo has occurred. Aleppo is the capital of Syria, supported by Russia and Iran. Russia and Iran basically saved the Bashar al-Assad regime. And Assad was surrounded by rebels. And for a while, there were stories that the flow of food had been stopped, and there has also been stories about massacres. There are actually four different factions in the war in Syria right now. We have Assad, ISIS, the rebels, and the Kurds. And all four of these groups have different international backing. So what does Trump say about this? Trump is very concerned about us getting bogged down in Syria, and he doesn't really want us to get involved. We are now training people, and we don't even know who they are. We don't even know what side they're really on. If you look at what happened in Iraq, for example, in the Iraq war, we have a very bad situation in Iraq. So in Syria, we could be helping people that are even worse than Assad. I think our media is telling us lies about Aleppo. Now, one of the reasons I think that is because a Canadian journalist is starting to speak out. Her name is Eva Bartlett, and she describes what's going on. She says that Bashar al-Assad is not the bad guy he's put out to be, neither are the Russians. But in fact, it's the terrorism, it's the terrorists in Aleppo that are causing the problem, which would be ISIS. By the way, the U.S. president, the current president, Barack Obama, who will shortly be the ex-president, has offered Saudi Arabia more than $115 billion in weapons, including equipment, training, and this is the most any U.S. administration has offered Saudi Arabia. Let's look at Hillary. Hillary has a huge obligation to the Clinton Foundation because she has taken hundreds of millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia over the years. Hillary was responsible for the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. Hillary and Obama put something like 200,000 tons of arms in Libya. Our government has been arming al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, and later these mercenaries would become ISIS. So Hillary made a deal to move weapons into Syria. However, some of these weapons ended up in Afghanistan. Of course, you know about the Islamic State, ISIS, of Iraq and Syria. One of my guests, Stephen Pigeon, says that ISIS is really the proxy army of Saudi Arabia. And if you look at the black flag of ISIS, it's an exact copy of the green flag of Saudi Arabia. And so Stephen Pigeon says that Saudi Arabia is influencing our government or controlling our government. It may be that Barack Obama was groomed to be president by a Saudi sheikh named Prince Al-Wahid bin Talal. This sheikh funded Obama in 1981. He is the one that gave the $25 million gift to Harvard so that Obama, who had a fraudulent law degree from Columbia, could get into Harvard Law. The condition of the gift was to allow Obama into the law school. So in other words, this Saudi sheikh gave $25 million to Harvard with the condition that they would let Barack Obama go to school there. And with the $25 million gift, they were supposed to create this Islamic study center. Actually, the woman that took the gift from Saudi Arabia was a person named Elena Kagan, who sits now on the Supreme Court. So this same sheikh that I'm telling you about, Prince Al-Wahid bin Talal, gave or spent $6.5 billion buying shares of the parent company of Fox News. And it's very interesting that, again, Barack Obama has been seen bowing to the Saudis as a sign of submission. So at one point, this Saudi prince, Al-Wahid bin Talal, owned a lot of Fox News. And Rupert Murdoch was the other controlling interest. So Saudi Arabia seems to have much influence on what's going on. So what are the goals? You've heard about this new world order, the global elite that are controlling what's going on in the world. And we finally got a president with Trump that is fighting against the new world order, that's fighting against globalism. Well, the first goal of the elite is to create a one world government. The world government will be a system in which people with knowledge about science and technology will take control of society. The society will be called a technocracy. And there will be a one-world church. There'll be a unified monetary system. And the second goal of the elite, of course, is to create a true technocracy. And the control of society will be administered by a group of technical experts. Technical experts will be about 1% of the total population. Now, the third goal of the elite is to take away the rights and the freedoms of the public. The elite are working to take away our rights of self-determination. We've been born into a prison, which has been called a consciousness condition tyranny by the contactee Billy Meyer. If you've listened to this show, you know I talk a lot about the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. The fourth goal of the ruling class is to merge mankind with machines. And the elites say that humanity is obsolete. So the intention of transhumanism is to take away your humanity. The fifth goal of the elite is to dumb down the public. And as Billy has said before, we are becoming indolent and obtuse, slow to understand, and lazy and not willing to take forth the effort to learn. It takes independent thinking to evolve your consciousness. And most people today are not willing to put forth the effort to be independent thinkers. To be independent thinkers, you have to do your own research. The sixth desire of the controllers is to place people into mega cities. And these mega cities are going to be humongous, with 20, 30, 40 million people. And we're going to be living in these coffin apartments where you barely have enough room to lie down. This is the future that they have planned for us. That's why we have to stop this. The seventh aim of the elite is to restrict travel. And we're seeing the beginnings of this already with the driverless cars. And if we don't watch it, we will lose the right to own and drive our own vehicles. There will be these driverless cars which will take us only to the places that we are allowed to go. And there will be very large freeways that connect these large cities, and we will not be allowed to go into restricted areas. The eighth aim of the rulers is to take away all privacy. There will be no privacy. You will not be allowed to have privacy. You won't even be allowed to have your own thoughts. The ninth goal of the New World Order is to eliminate borders between nations, to bring about the utter destruction of all national identity and national pride, which is a primary consideration if this world government is supposed to work. The tenth goal is to bring about the destruction of religion, and more specifically, the Christian religion. They do not want us to have the right to choose our own religion. There will be a religion created by the New World Order that we're supposed to follow. They want to bring about the end of all industrialization, and they want to create special agreements like NAFTA and GATT. They want to establish the ability to control every person through means of mind control. They will create human-like robots. And a man named Zbigniew Brzezinski, the National Security Advisor to President Carter, stated that shortly the public would be unable to think and reason for themselves. So the best thing that you can do is to continue to study, to continue to evolve your consciousness. That's the best way you can personally fight all of this. So anyway, I wanted to cover a little bit about the New World Order, a little bit about what was going on in the news. I do have a clip here I'm going to try to play, and it's some of the research that's being done in regard to Sheriff Arpaio, who has done 5 years of research on the Obama birth certificate. So let me play this. Bear with me.
We were trying to clear the president. It didn't work out that way. We had to follow the evidence. We let the evidence determine, the direction of the investigation. That's what we always do on any investigation. You get the evidence. This one was handled no differently than no matter what the investigation is about. So now, the important part is to present the pertinent details and the executive summary of our analysis. I'm going to turn this over to Mike Zullo, who dedicated 5 years of his life, 5 years of his life, taking this mission on, which I asked him to do 5 years ago. Mike, come on up and give yourself.
Thank you, Sheriff. I want to start by trying to give everyone here, including the media that's been viciously against us from the beginning, an understanding of how I tried to conduct this investigation. I believe in 2012, we did 2 press conferences. In those press conferences, I had made it clear that Sheriff Arpaio's original mandate to me was, Mike, take a look at this, clear this document, because I want to be the guy that clears this document and moves this country forward. This is no good. That was the mandate.
So, it turns out, I'll give you a quick summary, that the birth certificate is a forgery, that there was a source document. They found the source document. There are 2 labs that have verified that the birth certificate is a forgery and that it was a created Photoshop document. There was a lab in Italy and a lab in Hawaii that confirmed this to be the case. Sheriff Apayo's assistant here will go on and through step by step and show you. One of the things that was really obvious about the birth certificate is it was still in what they call layers. There are these layers that are created in Photoshop, and when you finally save one of these images, you compress all the layers. They hadn't even taken the time to do that. So, or we're being steered into a civil war. It's very interesting. I'm not sure exactly what's happening here. I have some comments by an individual named Dr. Manning on Obama and this birth certificate. So let's listen to them here a second.
A few days ago, I made the commitment that I would get to the bottom of Andrew Breitbart's death. I have a personal investment in this investigation, I believe. For the same thing to happen to me and Andrew Breitbart was left alive or yet alive, that he would seek to find out if I had been whacked, the administration, the Obama administration, or any other governmental agency would have been involved in the removal of my presence from this earth. I've now, my second investigation on this matter, have discovered that WikiLeaks published an article that Bin Laden's death or body was not buried at sea, and that the body was taken back to Dover Air Force Base on a plane that was guarded by the CIA and was examined, and there it was to be cremated. Now, Drudge reported that this week, and then they quickly withdrew the story, along with other major news agencies that was going with the WikiLeaks story, but for whatever reason, they withdrew it in midstream. I've gone ahead now and through my investigative sources been able to determine that the reason why Andrew Breitbart was killed was because he had discovered incontrovertible evidence that the Chinook helicopter that went down in Afghanistan in August was taken down by a suicide bomber, one of the 8 Afghans that was on that Chinook helicopter, and 22 of the members of the Navy SEAL Team 6, this very same team that was alleged to have captured and killed Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan, going back to April or May of 2011. This Navy SEAL team was killed. They were killed that they might remain silent about there was no raid, there was no Osama bin Laden body, and that it was all a hoax. Now, anybody who's been around the military for any length of time would know 22 Navy SEAL teams, 30 Americans all total, and 8 Afghanistan soldiers, Taliban soldiers on a Chinook helicopter, and then they all go down in one fell swoop. Very, very suspicious. But what's more suspicious, that Chinook helicopter went down on the 7th of August of the year 2011. General David Petraeus, who was in charge of the Afghan war and was the highest ranking military general over the armed forces, was promoted from the high ranking general and given the position of director of the CIA, which was very strange. Leon Panetta, who was then the CIA director, was given a position of Secretary of Defense. There was no Osama bin Laden killing. There was no Osama bin Laden capture. It was all a hoax, mainly to do two things. One, to camouflage and to quieten the questions about Barack Hussein Obama's ability and the birth certificate that he presented, that it was a forgery, and to change the views, change the direction, change the conversation in America. What more would change the conversation? What were the two biggest issues going on underground and above ground in America? Underground was the fact that Obama is not a U.S. citizen, that he is wholly ineligible. He is not constitutionally ineligible, rather. Let me put it that way. Obama is not constitutionally eligible. That was conversation number one. Conversation number two that had faded but was still major was that Barack Hussein Obama now has killed and captured the most wanted man on the planet in Osama bin Laden. Two of the major conversations, and one canceled out the other. It was a very shrewd move by the Obama administration. There were two fakes presented to us in April. One was the fake birth certificate. The other was the fake death certificate of Osama bin Laden. Two major fakes that the world will not soon forget, and I will continue to uncover. But let me ask you a question, because a lot of people like to disagree with me. And most, as I said before, 90% of all Americans are very liberal. They are willing, because everybody knows that Obama is not constitutionally eligible to serve for a litany of reasons, but more recently because of his criminal activity in the forged birth certificate, the forged certificate of live birth. But I raised a question the other day about the psyche of America and why America is so liberal, and people that think they're conservative are as liberal as the left, less intelligent bastards. I raised the question that during the Cold War, when Brezhnev, Gorbachev, Yeltsin, and prior to the collapse of the Soviet Union, prior to Ronald Reagan tearing Gorbachev to tear down the wall in Berlin, when we had bomb shelters in every school, every church, and every major building in America, because we were in a Cold War, we thought that perhaps we might get nuked by the Soviet Union, and the bomb shelters were there to protect us. Would we, during that time, or during the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, do you think that 10 years after Khrushchev and the Cuban Missile Crisis, that we would have voted for a person named Viktor Gorbachev or Viktor Yushchenko or Viktor Khrushchev, even though the person was not raised in Russia, and the mother of Viktor Yushchenko or Viktor Khrushchev or Viktor Gorbachev was white, but the father was a visiting student and had come in from Minsk, Russia, to study at Harvard and fell in love or had sex with a white woman, and a child was born, and the child was named Viktor Yushchenko. And then later on would want to run for president. Do you think that America would have voted for a president named Viktor Yushchenko during the Cold War? Absolutely not. So now why would they vote for 9 years after, or eight, 7 years after the 9/11 incident and the World Trade Center bombings? Why would they vote for a Muslim after the name Osama bin Laden was the most famous name on the planet? Why do they do that? The reason being is because most Americans and most conservative Americans and Republicans are as liberal as you can possibly be, number one. But let's go back to the fact that the CIA is now headed by David Petraeus. He was promoted out of the field. Obama brought him out of the field because he knew that there was no raid at Abbottabad. That crashed helicopter was simply a staged helicopter crash. There was no capture. There was no killing of Osama bin Laden. There was no transfer to the U.S. Carl Vinson. And there was no burial at sea. Now, WikiLeaks leaked the story, and Drudge and other major news agencies carried it, including the Associated Press. But in the middle of the day, they retracted the story, saying there was not enough evidence. WikiLeaks had the evidence, and the evidence is still there. Breitbart was killed because he had the evidence before WikiLeaks. Not before WikiLeaks, but from WikiLeaks, before WikiLeaks leaked the information to the press. Indeed, WikiLeaks had this information prior to. They had leaked it to Breitbart. Breitbart was sitting on it. The CIA knew that Breitbart had it. They whacked him. WikiLeaks then released the information. They released it. Now, here's the scenario. Sean Hannity said that he was going to release the tapes that Breitbart spoke about at CPAC, which was nothing. That's Obama's rowdy anarchist days at Harvard. But there was nothing to it. The release of that information by Sean Hannity was a fraud and an insult to the integrity of investigative journalism. Here's the scenario. Breitbart had received from WikiLeaks the information that there was no raid at Abbottabad, that Osama bin Laden was not killed, that General David Petraeus had been removed from his field command and kicked up to the level of CIA to keep him quiet about the fact that there was no raid, that the army that was not involved in moving from Afghanistan to Abbottabad, Pakistan. He was given a high-ranking position to keep him quiet. Leon Panetta, who was a CIA agent who knew there was also nothing, was kicked up to the Secretary of Defense. Breitbart knew this, and you can document it yourself. Just go back and check the records. Of the date that Chinook helicopter went down, with 22 Navy SEALs on board. I mean, why would you put all that, your eggs in one basket? And that Chinook helicopter, the weaponry plan, the defense plan, the deployment plan of the Chinook is that they should fly in tandem, two of them. And that there's radar, there's air cover, there's all kinds. You don't shoot down a Chinook helicopter. You might shoot a Huey, but you don't shoot down a Chinook. And everybody knows that. My friend Captain Neil Turner suggested and intimated that very possibly on board that ship, Chinook, was a suicide bomber of the 8 Afghans of the Taliban military.
Okay, I wanted to play a little bit of that clip because it talks about several important things. It talks about the birth certificate. It talks about the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden, who had already been dead for quite some time because of Marfan syndrome. He had a problem with his kidneys, and he died a while back, but they kind of kept that information from the people so they could have their boogeyman, to get their boogeyman at a later time when it was more advantageous to them. I'm not going to go the whole normal time. As I said earlier, our regular scheduled guest did not show up. But I thought I would take a little bit of this time to share with you some information that I've been getting from this great book from Roger Stone. It's called Clinton's War on Women. This is chapter 10. It talks about Barry Seal, a CIA operative that was flying cocaine and other drugs into Mena, Arkansas in the 80s when Bill Clinton was the governor of Arkansas. Let me read a little section here. It says, you've got millions of people in this country today who just don't feel connected to the rest, to the life the rest of us want them to live. You tell them to register and vote, get an education, and go to work, and they say, I may not have a job, but if I deal drugs, I can make money. Well, turns out Bill Clinton is was very much of a drug user. He had to be checked in rehab twice because he used cocaine on such a regular basis. And the drug trafficking into Arkansas can be traced back to a CIA drug smuggler named Barry Seal, who was flying, I think it was something like a C-130. It was a C-117, I believe. He was flying that cocaine from Columbia into Mena, Arkansas there. They would unload the cocaine off of his big propeller plane, and I think they were loading it into other, like Learjets, and then sending them all over the nation. Dan Lassiter was the guy that owned the Learjets. Dan Lassiter was the owner of the Ponderosa steakhouses back in the 70s and 80s. He was very rich and very much into cocaine as well. Anyway, let me continue here. It says, speaking of Barry Seal, he was probably one of the biggest drug smugglers ever brought before a court in the history of our country. Louisiana General Billy Gustee said, by his own admission, he, Seal, had flown over 100 flights, each bringing in between 600 and 1,200 pounds of cocaine. That's unbelievable. At a wholesale volume average of about 50,000 a pound, he had smuggled between $3 and $5 billion worth of drugs into the United States. His smuggling brought dope to thousands whose lives had been adversely affected by it. He had brought enough cocaine into this country to give a high to almost 100 million users. And he earned between 60 and 100 million through this criminal activity. Now, this was all done with the total knowledge of Bill Clinton. He had the totally aware of this. It was part of this drug revenue was brought in to fund the Iran-Contra thing. You remember Colonel Oliver North? He was the person that was like the boots on the ground in charge. Actually, Vice President Bush Sr., I believe it was Bush Sr., who was totally in charge of all this. This occurred in the 80s, by the way. They were bringing in about $100 million worth of cocaine a month into Mena, Arkansas. The money laundering was handled by the Rose Law Firm, where Hillary was. Vince Foster was there. It's just shocking. People do not understand this. When Trump was saying all those things about Hillary, that wasn't just mean-spiritedness. He was telling the truth. If she really is a really crooked Hillary. She's been part of this whole mess. Anyway, in the 1980s, Seal moved his operations to Arkansas. That's what I've been talking about. And he struck up a personal friendship with Bill Clinton. Seal ran many of his operations out of a covert CIA landing base in Mena, Arkansas. He was protected by his employers, the CIA, which sometimes is jokingly called the Cocaine Import Agency, Governor Bill Clinton of Arkansas, and former Vice President Bush. Seal would direct plane loads of cocaine into Mena, Arkansas in the 1980s. which would then be distributed throughout the state and the U.S. The money from these selling of these drugs went into people's pockets, but it was also used to procure guns for the Contras. And most people think this whole operation stopped in 1986 when Barry Seal was gunned down. By the way, the word is Oliver North was the one who had Barry Seal killed. So this is just horrible, horrible corruption that I don't even like about. But it is a truth that needs to be known. Let me read a little section about Dan Lasseter, and then we'll quit a little early today. The Clinton-Dan Lasseter connection was a very important one. Dan Lasseter was a young entrepreneur who in 1965 founded the Ponderosa Steakhouses. He got into horse racing, made a lot of money with horse racing, and he also got into cocaine smuggling and money laundering. And he was one of Bill Clinton's closest friends and political contributors. Dan Lasseter was a successful businessman, a very close friend of Bill Clinton, and he was deep into the underworld of drug trafficking and criminal activities. Eventually, Dan Lasseter was prosecuted, and he did some time, but not very much. In 1988, an FBI bulletin noted that Lasseter was the top supplier of cocaine to the bond and investment banking community in Little Rock. Lasseter was part of this Dixie Mafia cocaine trafficking scenario. Dan Lasseter and Bill Clinton, they became very good friends. They were involved in drugs, parties, cocaine, women, money laundering. And then you get Bill Clinton's brother-in-law, Roger Clinton, who was in a rock band, a singer in a rock band, and was also a heavy drug user. The story goes on and on and on. It's probably worth me spending a little more time in this book at a future date, but not this evening. Anyway, you know, you have to be flexible when you do these programs, because if you depend on guests, you know, sometimes they show, sometimes they don't. Anyway, hello, Faith 333. I appreciate you listening. Well, maybe I will go on a little bit longer since you guys are hanging with me on the show here. I will talk a little bit more about Dan Lasseter, and we'll try to round out the program this evening. There was another person that Clinton knew, and this was a girl named Patricia Ann Smith. See, Bill Clinton and Dan Lasseter, they had a lot of younger girlfriends. They get involved with these high school girls. Let me continue here. One of the victims of Bill Clinton and Lasseter was a young girl named Patty Ann Smith. Bill, Roger, and Lasseter were corrupting and then partying with teenage girls. One of these victims was this girl named Patricia Ann Smith. She was 16 or 17 years old. She was a student at one of the high schools in Little Rock, Arkansas, and Lasseter would give her cocaine, and there was sex involved as well. So, Bill Clinton, let me continue. That is who Bill Clinton was partying with in the 1980s. Dan Lasseter and the teenage and even high school girls he was corrupting. The Arkansas State Trooper Barry Spivey said that he can remember flying Bill Clinton multiple times on Lasseter's jet. Spivey flew to the Kentucky Derby with Lasseter and Clinton. Spivey also said under oath that Clinton was at the Lasseter's residence many times. Roger Clinton, who I mentioned earlier, was Bill's brother, who was also a heavy cocaine user. Eventually, in 1990, Bill Clinton pardoned his brother, and pardon Dan Lassiter. There's an interesting dialogue here between a man named Charles Hayes, who was a contract agent for the CIA. He was one of the men who ran the MENA drug operations I was talking about early. And he was interviewed by an investigator. So this is the person being interviewed was, again, a man named Charles Hayes, who worked for the CIA. Let me continue here. Question. Was there money laundering involved in the MENA operations? Answer, yes. The main thing about MENA was the political power and money associated with it. Question. Would it be correct to say that the MENA operations generated $100 million per week? Answer, no, that's too high. Question, would it be correct to say that the MENA operations generated $1,000 a week? Oh, no, that's too low, the answer was. Would it be correct to say about $10 million a week? Answer, that's about right. Question, was there DOD involvement in the MENA operations? Answer, yes, it could not have happened without the DOD involvement. Question, do you know Larry Nichols? Answer, yes. Now, let me throw this in. You should look up Larry Nichols. Larry Nichols appears pretty often on the Alex Jones Show. Larry Nichols worked for Hillary and worked for Bill Clinton. And eventually he drew the line in the sand when they started doing all this drug trafficking stuff. Let me continue here. Larry Nichols denies that he ever met you or Clay Lacy. Nichols, answer, Nichols and Lacy have had their pictures taken together. Larry certainly knows me. If you had robbed Fort Knox and I knew that you had done it, would you admit to knowing me? Question, do Lacy and ADFA have connections? Yes, Lacy is associated with ADFA. Do you know Wu Nips? Yes. Do you know Bob Neal? Yes. Is Bob Neal associated with the underground complex at the Hope, Arkansas airport? Evidently, there's an underground complex at this airport. I really don't know much about it. But this was an interesting question and answer session between a CIA agent and an investigator. Let me read a little bit about this Barry Seal. Barry Seal, again, was the guy that was flying in all these drugs in this C-117. Barry Seal, a gun runner, a drug trafficker, and a covert CIA operative extraordinaire, is hardly a familiar name in American politics. Most people don't know who he is. But 9 years after he was murdered by a hail of bullets by the Medellin cartel, see, this Medellin cartel was part of this group in South America that Colonel Oliver North had knock off Barry Seal. So let me continue here. After he was murdered in a hail of bullets by the Medellin cartel, hitmen outside a Salvation Army shelter in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, he has come back to haunt the reputations of three American presidents. Seal's legacy includes more than 2,000 newly discovered documents that now verify and quantify much of what previously had been only suspicion, conjecture, and legend. And one thing I'd like to say here really quickly is if Trump doesn't drain the swamp, if Trump doesn't go after Hillary and Bill, I would say it's probably because he fears for his life. That's the level of corruption that we have right now. And what they're doing is they're coming after internet freedom because they have this whole idea of fake news. And believe me, what I'm giving you is not fake news. This is the real McCoy. And I urge you to get this book. It's called The Clinton's War on Women. It's by Roger Stone and Robert Morrow. You can read this for yourself. It's amazing stuff. It's really not the focus of my programs usually, but I think it's important to understand to get a good handle on the crisis that we're in right now. We're really on the verge of losing our country. And we've been so lucky that we have won this election. And I know there's like half the population that hates Trump. And I would argue the reason they hate Trump is because they've been brainwashed by the mainstream media. If you do your research and you learn about Bush and the Clintons and Obama and the whole mess up there, you'll understand what I'm saying. Anyway, let me continue. The documents, let me continue here with Barry Seale. Seale's legacy includes more than 2,000 newly discovered documents that now verify and quantify much of what previously has been only a suspicion, conjecture, and legend. The documents confirm that from 1981 to his brutal death in 1986, Barry Seale carried on one of the most lucrative, extensive, brazen operations in the history of international drug trade. He was working for the U.S. government. Let me continue. And that he did it with the evident complicity, if not collusion, of elements of the United States government, apparently with the acquiescence of Ronald Reagan's administration. I don't know if Reagan knew, but Bush Sr. knew. Bush Sr. was in charge of this. Let me skip over a little bit of that. Now, there's an interesting guy named Chip Tatum who had a radio show for a while. I don't know if he still does, but he was a hitman for the CIA. And he stopped doing that when they were going to have him kill Ross Perot. And he said, I had to draw the line somewhere. I mean, that's just purely a politically motivated hit. So let me talk a little bit here while we've got just a few minutes left about Oliver North. They told their lawyers that they thought they were working for Oliver North. Larry Nichols says the CIA killed Seale, and those captured for his murder were the same ones he was working with in the Contra resupply efforts. Here's our theory. The big lie in that the Medellin cartel murdered Seale. Instead, it was the bipartisan American CIA drug cartel that murdered him. The American CIA cartel was running the Medellin cartel. Seale had turned from an asset into a liability. Author Daniel Hopsicker, who wrote a biography on Seale, concluded that Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of the National Security Council indeed used the Colombian hit team to murder Seale, although this was never proven. Wow, scary stuff. Yes, let me tell you again, when Trump talks about draining the swamp, he's not mean-spirited. He's telling you the truth. He's telling you how difficult and how bad things really, really are in the world today. And I appreciate you guys hanging out. We've got about 5 minutes left. I think I'm going to call it an evening. I'm not sure when I'm going to be back online, but I'm sure I'll be back for too long, folks. I appreciate all the listeners, especially all the people listening in the archives. I got Stephen Pigeon on the 27th, Betsy Lewis on the 29th, and I'm sure I'll sneak a show in between those two times. Have a great Christmas, folks. We'll see you later. Good night.